once or twice a year, in my dreams, I relive doing my final exams again for high school. Anybody remembers, recognizes that feeling? Yeah. And you feel the pressure again. The pressure not to let my wonderful teachers down. The pressure not to let my parents down who believe in me. But something always goes wrong in those dreams, isn't it? In my case, I usually can't find the classroom where the final exams are. Or if I can find it and I get there, it's too late. The exam just finished and I'm just the last one. And then that's the point in when the dream turns into a nightmare. Not the nightmare to fail my exams, but the nightmare to not live up to the trust of my teachers and of my parents who trusted me. Our passage from the Hebrew Scriptures is also about a test of trust for Abraham. Now, the very first time we hear of Abraham in a few chapters back in Genesis is when he is 75 years old already. And he's told by God to leave everything he has behind and to pack up and go to a place where God will lead him. Now, for us nowadays, with instant communications, with telephone, with email, with Skype, with cars and planes and all kinds of organizations that help us out, for us nowadays, that will be tough enough as it is. But for Abraham, that long ago, it's just unthinkable. Unthinkable. People just didn't move like that. Especially not older people who had no children to look after the parents. Leaving everything behind was the same as committing suicide. All their lives had worked hard to build up enough to live off it in his time of old age. So the last thing you did is pick up your stuff and go somewhere that you didn't know what to expect. And on top of that, God promises Abraham that he will be the father of a great people. Problem is, of course, Abraham is 75 years old. Sarah is 65 years old. And they have no children. Sarah is barren. And they have gotten used to that idea a long time ago. There wasn't anything that could be done about it. End of story. Enter God. God who upends it all with not one, but two crazy promises. A new land. And enough descendants to make not just a big tribe, but to build an entire nation. So, Sarah and Abraham wait for a few years for that to happen, and nothing happens. And they have to wait a few more years, and still nothing happens. And then they decide to help God out a little bit. And Abraham fathers a child with one of his slave women, Hagar. And the child is called Ishmael. Now, granted, it's not the perfect solution, but okay, it works for them. They're at peace with it. They can live with it. But then, a few years later, against all hope and against all expectations and against anything that's rational, a son is born. And they call him Isaac. And Abraham is 100 years old by then. And Sarah is just over 90. And as God and as Abraham are getting to know each other in the following stories in Genesis, it is becoming clear that God has big plans for Abraham. But the question is Abraham up to it? Is Abraham ready for those plans? Because it's not going to be easy. It's going to be wonderful, but hard. So once Isaac is born and everything seems to be hunky-dory and headed straight for a storybook happy ending, God says, whoa, wait a minute, we are not done yet. And then God puts Abraham to the most horrible test a parent could ever get. Now on the surface, this is an awful, awful story. What kind of God would demand the life of a child, any child? At face value, this story seems barbaric to us, and confusing, and backwards. So again, what kind of God would demand that? Well, the truth is, lots of them. Notice that when God tells Abraham to kill, to slaughter, to sacrifice his only son, Abraham doesn't argue. He doesn't protest. He doesn't even ask why. He just gets to it. Now, how would you respond if you heard a voice telling you to sacrifice your child? I'm pretty sure you would resist. And the least people want to know is why. You'd refuse, and even if you knew why, you would still refuse. Yet Abraham goes along with this as if it's the most normal thing. Why? Because in that culture and in that time, all the religions in that area believed in child sacrifice. It was the normal thing to do to keep the gods happy. The idea was the bigger the sacrifice, the happier the gods would be. They would protect you. So when this particular God that Abraham just gets to know, now this God tells Abraham to do the same thing, Abraham thinks, well, just another of those gods demanding sacrifice, child sacrifice. He wouldn't flinch. He wouldn't like it, but he would still do it. And then the story unfolds and we get to know this new God who is radically different from all the other gods in that area. Because as Abraham goes to fulfill what is considered normal in those days, God stops him from doing so at the very last moment. Now you need to know that this story up until this point would sound very familiar to the people of that time. It's like playing a familiar song. You know what's coming next, and you know what the refrain will be like, and when it comes in, and after a few more bars you can hum along. This is kind of the same idea. The story starts, and we think we know what's going to happen, but suddenly there's somebody who yanks the needle off the record, making a screeching sound to get your attention. God does the same thing here in this story. You think what's going to happen next, and then the needle is yanked off the record to get your attention in a dramatic and powerful way. That's what's happening here. And God says, you know, it's not necessary. We don't need a child sacrifice to have a good relationship. Good relationships are based on trust. And I needed your trust. You need my trust. And I couldn't help but think of the scene that's not in the Bible, but it's the scene that happens after. Of course, Isaac and Abraham have to ride back home again. They're both on the cart, and they have this awkward silence, difficult glances. You talk about everything except what just happened an hour or two ago when Abraham was tying his only son down to the altar with a knife in his hand. Let's not discuss that. Let's not go there. But seriously, what kind of God would play with a man's emotions like that? What kind of God would scar a child like that for the rest of his life? There are no easy answers to those questions. But what we need to know is those are the wrong questions. That is not what this story is about. For the people who heard this story almost 4,000 years ago, this was about something else entirely. What this story wants to convey is the risks involved in being with partnership with the God of the covenant, the God of the promises. The very real risks that are involved in trusting God. Trusting God doesn't mean your life will be fine, smooth sailing. In fact, it will be difficult, but worthwhile. Because that's the whole thing, is trust, isn't it? Trust is so fragile. It can be so easily abused and broken. It doesn't take much at all. All relationships, all good relationships, are based on trust. Between parents, between siblings, between neighbors, between us here at Pine Grove, between us and God. And between God and us. You see, Isaac was not just any child. He was a special child. The special child of a very special promise. Abraham and Sarah were so old, there was no reason for them anymore to have any hope of a child. So Isaac's arrival was clearly God at work. God who gives new life when we've given up a long, long time ago. Yet, God demanded of Abraham the ultimate sacrifice, not to terrorize him, but to have him experience for a moment how difficult trusting God will be and can be. Now, of course, you probably know this story. There's this silly story about a man who goes for a walk, and he's walking and falls off a cliff. And on his way down, he manages to grab a branch that's sticking out from the side of the cliff. As he's dangling there between life and death, and he realizes there's nobody else around to help him out, he realizes that The only person who can help me out here is God. So he yells up to God. He says, God, are you there? And to his amazement, he hears a voice saying, yes, my child, I'm here. Save me, yells the man. Well, do you trust me? The voice asks. Well, yes, of course I trust you. Save me. Well, if you really trust me, the voice says, you need to do one thing. Anything, anything, just save me. Okay, anything, says the voice. I want you to let go. And the man thinks for a few moments and then yells up again, anybody else up there? Good stories, good jokes have a profound truth in them. This one too. For Abram, there wasn't anybody else up there. He had to let go. He had to take a huge risk. He didn't know if it would work out. He had to trust God. There was no safety net for him. There was no other person up there. He wasn't sure what was going to happen. He might just as well have to kill his son, like all the other people around him used to do. I showed you some picnic pictures of St. Paul's last week that we had. And of course, with all those people there, over 200 people, I'm not sure how many exactly, but I talked to a few people from different congregations all around us in the Thunder Bay area. And all of them, without exception, spoke to me about the difficulties they were experiencing as a congregation. Not one congregation told me, yeah, things are fine for us. Smooth sailing, not a cloud in the sky. All of them were experiencing issues, problems, challenges. Our faith is being tested. Just like Abraham's faith was tested. In fact, faith is always being tested. And Pine Grove is not an exception in this. We as a congregation have to decide what is getting our real attention. The God of the covenant, who created the heavens and the earth, or our budget. Are we paralyzed by a deficit and dwindling numbers? Or do we see where God is creating new life and abundance? There are no easy answers, but I realize that Pine Grove often already is a place of abundance and unexpected moments of grace and joy. And not just in the big things, like the green thumb tea or the big fall supper we put on. I think also, and maybe especially, in the small moments, moments that almost fly by without you noticing it, small moments that show us how we connect to each other, how we connect to others outside our walls. God is present when we can laugh at ourselves. But God is also present when we take the time to earnestly listen to a person who needs our support and our care. God is present in the gentle touch of a hand, just at the right time. God is present in a big, warm, enthusiastic bear hug. God is present in a caring phone call and a card. God is present when somebody has the courage to say, I'm sorry for hurting you the other day. And God is present when the answer is, and I forgive you. Those things happen here at Pine Grove. And when it happens, God is present. Because we are building a community. And building a community that shows Christ's name, that bears Christ's name. And we make room for all. Yes, it is nice to have a balanced budget that's all in the black, but ultimately that's not what we are called to do. We are called to trust God, risky as it will be occasionally, because there is no safety net. There is no plan B. We cannot save ourselves. There's no one else up there. We have to let go. But you know, the funny thing is, when we decide to do that, when we do let go, we suddenly find things are working out somehow. And suddenly we have to talk about that. We want to share that with other people. And then we find another interesting thing. Those people will be listening. And they go like, that's fascinating. That's good. And they want to be part of that, whatever it is. And they will be joining us on this risky journey that we call faith. Amen.